Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
2025 marks the 60th anniversary of the first Honda Formula One victory in the 1965 Mexico Grand Prix. More than half a century later, the drive and innovation that powers Honda racing still inspires everything Honda does, from F1 victories to the Civic Hybrid being named the 2025 North American Car of the Year. Honda Racing is leading the charge when it comes to innovation. And here's where it gets really cool. Every Honda-powered F1 car is packed with sensors, hundreds of them, all feeding live data straight back to the Honda Racing team in Sakura, Japan. We're talking about real-time analysis that helps engineers squeeze out every ounce of performance on the track. And the amazing part? That same cutting-edge thinking is making its way into the cars we drive every day, thanks to the expertise of Honda Racing engineers. Their work has led to advances like the hybrid technology now used in Honda's consumer vehicles. The 2025 Civic Sedan Hybrid is engineered for fun, from the racetrack to your driveway. Learn more about the Civic and the latest Honda innovations at Honda.com.
Well, Pinks, I think a lot of people listening to last week's show want to know about the footwear. What was going on the grid this week?
Oh, the footwear. I mean, the irony of the footwear. So I get myself some closed-toe shoes, but they've got a big heel on them, and I fall off the stage.
Really?
Not really.
Really? I mean, I nearly broke my ankle. So, but just as long as my toes were safe. Don't worry about the toes. Wow. The ankle's gone.
You need some of those climbing gear. You know those things they wear when they do rock climbing?
Ice picks.
Then you won't fall.
No.
No.
What do you mean? What are they called?
No, they do that. Free form climbing. They kind of can put their toes on very narrow edges and cling on. Either that or Wellington boots. Good enough for Lewis, isn't it?
Yeah. 2 weeks in a row he wore Wellington boots.
Listen, I actually stood up for Lewis this weekend because he was getting a bit of banter in and around the paddock. I love how he expresses himself through his clothes.
What, his wellies?
Well, whatever he wants to wear. Let him wear it. It's great.
Nice. I agree.
Brings a bit more character to the paddock.
No, he's fantastic.
No, we can't all wear chinos and polo shirts, can we?
DH, I'm always reminded, didn't you say on the pod once that you felt nervous about turning out wearing a T-shirt, didn't you say that once?
I don't remember that, Tom. I don't feel nervous.
Am I putting words into your mouth?
You are. Yeah,
Damon, what did you wear for the first ever Sky Sports broadcast in Australia?
Oh, I wore a lovely green jacket. But it was raining, so it was a kind of olive green jacket. And all I heard on the coming through my ears from the gallery, from the producer's gallery, was, what the hell is he wearing? The chief of Sky News or Sky Sports was there and took exception to my jacket. So I gave it to him at Christmas, signed. At the Christmas party.
Nice.
That was not off to a good start, really. But that was my contribution to the fashion world. But, since then, I've kind of toned it down a bit and, gone for the boring old colours, blue.
Chinos and the polo shirt.
Yeah. Safe. That's me.
Folks listening at home, that is the voice of Damon Hill. He's back with us this week. Yay!
Yay!
Can you officially start this week's pod for us, DH?
Yeah, I can start. Yeah, so welcome everybody to this week's edition of F1 Nation with Natalie Pinkham and Tom Clarkson.
Hooray!
Great to have the trio back, and we're going to dissect in forensic detail the last race because it was fascinating. We've got some unbelievable things that have happened in the last week. We've had Lewis Hamilton signing his contract with Mercedes, so we know what's happening at Mercedes for the next 2 years. There was big meetings going on down there about engines, weren't there? There were the heads of all the motor companies that are involved in F1 and some that aren't involved in F1 that might be involved in the future. They were there for a big powwow about engines.
Guys, before we get into the nitty-gritty, I want to take this opportunity to issue an apology.
Oh.
And it's to the Sauber Alfa Romeo people, because I was chatting to Fred Vasseur over the weekend and I said to him, Fred, the Tuesday before this last race was a day off for everybody, and I went and rode a motocross bike, and it was brilliant. Red Bull own everything as far as the eye can see around the Red Bull ring, and I was up in some forest doing a 12-kilometer loop on this KTM, and all the Sauber guys were there, and I was like, they were going having a great time doing jumps and stuff like that. And I said to Fred, did your guys enjoy riding the motocross bikes? And he said, what do you mean they were riding the motocross bikes? And I went, and he said, they asked me if they could ride the motocross bikes. And I told them that it was too dangerous and that they weren't allowed.
Do you mean Kimmy?
No, I think it's all the mechanics and the engineers
mechanics
and stuff
okay,
like
not
that.
The drivers,
and they've just gone and got a massive bollocking because of me. So to all the guys in Hinville who are riding those motorcycles, I'm sorry.
You're not invited again, are you?
No.
Glass snitch.
Yes. Yes. God. So that was Orcs. DH, you would have enjoyed it, actually. It was really fun. Oh. I got very muddy and very sweaty.
I'm sure Sky wouldn't have worried if I'd broken my leg. It would have been good TV, wouldn't it? You know, being like that turn up. What have you been doing? Oh, yeah, I've been an idiot on a motorbike. You're lucky you survived that, Tom. I mean, when was the last time you were on a motocross bike?
I think with you, about 20 years ago in the desert in Dubai.
That's true. Yeah. We did do that.
I don't know if you have seen on Kimmy's Instagram his son Robin, who is 6 and is incredible on this little motorbike. It's astonishing. I mean, he's going to be, isn't he? Because he's Kimmy's son, but totally fearless. And I showed my son, and now my son wants to give it a go because Robin's doing it. They're born within a couple of weeks of each other. So anything Robin does, Wolf wants to do too.
How are you going to stop him, Pinks? I suppose just not give him the opportunity.
That's the problem, isn't it? Expensive hobbies these kids have.
Yeah. Exciting, though.
It is cool, isn't it? Good to go out of your comfort zone when you're young.
Except when you're watching your own kid. Yeah, it's just, it's different. I mean, when my son started racing, it's totally different when you're watching motor racing. You watch a Formula One race and you're going, come on, you could have taken more risks and everything. And you watch your son going around, you're going, you know, do you mind just going a bit slower there? Maybe just come into the pits.
Let's talk about the risk taken on track on Sunday. Can we please talk about some of the incidents that led to penalties? Because I know for a fact that you two will disagree with those 5-second penalties being dished out.
Well, you start, Pinks. What did you make? Let's start with Lando Norris and Sergio Perez. What did you make of that?
All I know as a fan of the sport is I want to see wheel-to-wheel hard racing. And that's, I believe, what we saw.
Sergio Perez now, turn 4, trying to go the long way round the outside. His duel continues with Lando Norris as he now goes onto the gravel and he loses 6 or 7 places as a result of that. That was not what Perez needed. He's down to 10th.
I think a lot of fans will be disappointed that Lando was then penalised for that, which he actually believed cost him 2nd place in the Grand Prix.
Because of the penalty. He's complaining about the penalty. So he was racing in the way that he's grown up racing. You know, he did actually say somewhere that karting, everyone knows if you go around the outside, someone's going to lean on you and put you in the dirt. Well, I mean, is that right? You know, that's like saying if you get into the penalty box, you can trip someone up. I mean, I'm going to take a different tack and I'm going to see what happens because I actually also agree. I like hard racing and you can't really expect someone to give way if just because a guy's going around the outside. By the same token, I used to race against a certain driver called Michael Schumacher and he used to do that to me. And there was an uproar when it happened in those days, but now it's changed. So the trend is towards people wanting to see action. Clearly, the fans want to see a bit of hard knock. You know, they want to see a bit of argy-bargy. And so maybe times have changed. But if you go back even further, if you put someone off into the dirt, you could kill them. It was very dangerous to do that. We have to make a decision whether or not, if for example, it was made illegal to push someone wide on a corner, then Lando would have had to back off in the corner and make room for Sergio, who's on the outside. And then you might get closer racing. So the argument that it's good racing might not hold up, if you see what I mean, because actually if drivers can't push people off the road, it might mean that drivers have more opportunity to go around the outside.
But Damon, their cars were not actually that close together. I didn't feel that Lando, he didn't change the angle of his steering input and Checo wasn't ahead. It was the first lap after the safety car as well. So it's going to be close. It's going to be hard. And we've seen in the past that going around the outside there is a risk. And if you're the person on the outside, you're the one taking the risk. And I think Checo should have just backed out. It's as simple as that. And I think to give Lando a 5-second penalty was hard, but to then give him 2 penalty points was just proof to me that it was doubly wrong and that the stewards had slightly misjudged the situation because
he's up to 10 points now as well, isn't he?
Yeah. I mean, I think he loses 2 before Silverstone, but still 10 out of 12, and then he's on a race ban. I just felt That was two guys who knew exactly what they were doing. Nothing that Lando did was dangerous. You could argue, you're arguing, Damon, that he lent on him a bit. Well, that's what racing is, isn't it?
Yeah, sure it is. But I'm just trying to say, imagine it was the other way. Imagine you brought the rules back. So at the moment, we're talking about track limits a lot and people losing lap times because of track limits. And they've started to accept, drivers have started to accept that they can't just drive wide on the circuit and on the curbs and gain an advantage and it be okay. So they're actually starting to apply tighter regulations to the track limits. What if they started to apply tighter regulations to the way people drove? Because I think that most people would argue if you allow people to run people off the track, then you're just going to get chaos out there, aren't you? There is an argument to say that the tighter the regs can be on running wide when you've got a car on the outside of you, the better racing you're going to get, because it means that somebody will try to go around the outside. The driver on the inside has to make allowances for that. So in other words, if you get a car alongside going into a corner, you've got to come out together, not just one of you. It's a different way of looking at the race. So if they're taking the sport in that direction, it might mean it's taking away the contact element. In other words, contact is to be avoided.
But there was no contact yesterday.
No, Sergio had to avoid contact.
Take it back 12 months, Damon. Alex Albon, Lewis Hamilton, they made contact and Albon had got the pass done. And so I feel that 5-second penalty 100% deserved. This occasion, Perez hadn't got it done. There was no contact. He opted to run wide rather than get out of it with the throttle. That's just good hard racing. I mean, and the thing is, I don't think you can leave it in the hands of the stewards. I think it's unfair to put that emphasis on the stewards. Wind it back two races, Gasly and Norris at Paul Ricard. They had some hard racing, was pushed wide. There was no 5-second penalty then, different stewards. So consistency is really hard.
Yeah, I was going to say, and I think that's the frustration actually for the fans and drivers alike, is lack of consistency. Because if you knew that one rule applied week after week, then you'd know kind of what to drive to. Alonso was complaining about the same, wasn't he? That there just was a lack of consistency in the application of the rules.
In terms of dangerous driving and deserving of penalty points, I thought what happened in qualifying, now that you mention Alonso, Pinks, what happened in qualifying when Sebastian Vettel balked Fernando at the end of Q2, I thought that was far more dangerous than anything we saw during the Grand Prix. I was chatting to the guys at Alpine and they said that when they were in the stewards room, they found out that Vettel was only told about Alonso getting close to him 2 seconds before Alonso got there. So he had no chance to react.
Yeah, but did you hear the team radio? Because Vettel did say, yeah, I know. And then it's like he was caught napping or something. It was a bit weird because then he suddenly realised that Alonso was right there.
Yeah, because Alonso's, you know, it's the fastest bit of the track, that, isn't it?
Yeah. Is that just a sort of a nuance of the track? Is that just a problem that we do have with that part of the track in Austria? Because Vettel, I noticed, was very apologetic to Fernando. And yet afterwards, he was really trying to justify his action, saying, look, I did what I had to do because people had overtaken me and then slowed right down. There was not much more I could do.
This is nothing new with this. I mean, it goes back to the days when they had qualifying tyres. In fact, that's why they got rid of qualifying tyres. It's because you had people doing extremely slow out laps while people were on a massively hot lap and fully committed. And the problem is with that circuit, the Red Bull Ring, is that it's a short lap. So there's really nowhere to hide. So they, you know, they try as you might, the slower you go, the worse it is. So the more you try and keep out of the way, the more you're obliged to maybe almost park on the track, and the more the bigger disparity between the guy on the hot lap and the slow lap. So actually, there should be a much higher minimum speed for people going on the circuit. So you're not allowed to go below a certain speed, for example. So you can't do that. So once you leave the pits, you have to be committed to a faster lap. When people start to slow down on the circuit, you've got a problem. I mean, let's face it, if you've got a car parked on the track, they stop the race or bring out the safety car.
And you have to feel for Fernando. He actually thought he could have put it P5 or P6 were it not for that.
Well, if you chat to the engineers, Pinks, they think further forward. They thought if he'd absolutely nailed it, P3 was possible on the grid.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, that's very encouraging signs for them. But when you consider that his teammate was all the way back in, what, P17?
Actually, fun little Fernando story, talking of his engineers. Before qualifying, one of his engineers, I'm not going to mention his name, took a £10 note and said, Fernando, if you can get through to Q3... with 2 sets of soft left, you can have this £10 note. So to do that, he needed to get through to Q2 with just one lap one flying lap. And so, yes, he did do that, which meant he would have had the two sets of softs for Q3. But then, of course, the Vettel incident happened and he didn't actually get to do Q3. Everyone was angry in the team, frustrated. And then Fernando just went up to this engineer and said, "I still want the tenner. Give me the tenner." Apparently, he loves all those little games, you know.
I bet.
I just love Fernando. I think he's so much smarter than most people out there.
Mm. And you're right. He does treat it as a game, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Well, you can have all the money in the world. It's not about that for him.
No.
I delivered. Give me my tenner, you know.
Yeah.
Now, also, I have to, something, I'm getting flashbacks now of my experience of watching the whole episode. I turn on the national anthem the Austrian national anthem was fantastic. I mean, you know, who was that band?
Michael Grubinger.
That is the way to do it. You know, some of those national anthems can be a bit dull sometimes.
I know, but that was like proper rocky, wasn't it?
Proper punk rock version of the Austrian national anthem. What a way to get going.
And what you didn't see on camera is that Johnny was playing air guitar as it was doing. And I was thinking, just cut away, show Johnny Herbert right now. You would have loved it.
And
David,
those lunatics coming, there's people falling out of the sky with bat suits on, and an aeroplane flies through the middle of them. I mean, I think the Austrians are, I mean, certainly the Red Bull crew are fantastic.
They are.
They do it very well.
It was a great show. It was a great show. And I think it was just a real celebration of fans coming back to the sport. It was, you felt the atmosphere from the minute you arrived at the track, there was that sense of anticipation. We're free. We can go back and support live sport. And we're going to party hard. And it was, it was quite moving, to be honest.
And they got a sense of humour as well.
Yeah, they do.
Obviously, Lando has now become a kind of honorary Dutchman driving an orange car. So they get to support two teams. I thought it's brilliant.
It's smart, actually, from him to say afterwards, "And these are just the best fans." And then you just wait for the reaction. Lapping it up. It's brilliant. Yeah. You don't have to go and garner support around the world, don't you, as a young driver?
Really, really great to see the fans back like that. It's a show, and the show, it has to have the fans in it. It's just not a show otherwise. Well, it is a show, but it's not complete.
I was surprised how much I'd missed the fans, actually. It was only when they were back, you go, God, yes, you really feel like this is an event.
Yeah, I've got goosebumps just thinking about Silverstone.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
2025 marks the 60th anniversary of the first Honda Formula One victory in the 1965 Mexico Grand Prix. More than half a century later, the drive and innovation that powers Honda racing still inspires everything Honda does, from F1 victories to the Civic Hybrid being named the 2025 North American Car of the Year. Honda Racing is leading the charge when it comes to innovation. And here's where it gets really cool. Every Honda-powered F1 car is packed with sensors, hundreds of them, all feeding live data straight back to the Honda Racing team in Sakura, Japan. We're talking about real-time analysis that helps engineers squeeze out every ounce of performance on the track. And the amazing part? That same cutting-edge thinking is making its way into the cars we drive every day, thanks to the expertise of Honda Racing engineers. Their work has led to advances like the hybrid technology now used in Honda's consumer vehicles. The 2025 Civic Sedan Hybrid is engineered for fun, from the racetrack to your driveway. Learn more about the Civic and the latest Honda innovations at honda.com.
You're complaining, Tom, about the penalty that Lando got because he squeezed Sergio on the outside in a, what some people think is a completely legitimate racing manoeuvre.
Yeah, me. That was me, yeah.
Yeah. And then, boot on the other foot corner, you've got Sergio Perez and Charles Leclerc going around the fast, was it turn 6?
Yeah. The old Bosch curve at the old Austria.
The old Bosch curve, is it?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
There goes Leclerc out of turn three. Got a much better exit than Sergio Perez. And after Perez picked up a 5-second penalty at this corner a few laps ago, Leclerc's going to be going for it again. And Leclerc's going around the outside again, but this time he's not quite close enough. Tries to get Perez on the exit. This is going to carry on to turn five and six as well, because there's nothing to separate these two cars. Round the outside goes Charles Leclerc. You don't overtake there around the outside, and that's why Leclerc goes off into the gravel and for the second time trying to overtake Sergio Perez, loses ground by heading into the gravel.
Well, he was a bit of bish bash bosh going on that corner.
Yeah.
And he did, he certainly did, but I don't think he had any option, because you've got to run wide a little bit, but then I'm arguing against myself there.
You're a little bit.
Yeah. So he had no option but to run him off the track.
Once they'd given the 5-second penalty to Norris, they had to then penalise Perez for both of those incidents, didn't they?
Yes, they did. Yeah.
I felt Perez was a little bit more aggressive with Leclerc than Norris had been with Perez, but I would have let them go if I'd been in the stewards' room. But I could sort of understand a little more why they penalised those two, because Perez was hard and even apologised afterwards, saying, "That's not me," didn't he?
I saw that they both wanted to just draw a line under it and move on, which was quite nice, really, wasn't it?
Yeah, very grown up. I thought that was a good response.
But if that's the attitude of the drivers,
yeah,
then hey, what's the problem? Even Horner didn't have an issue with what Lando Norris did to Perez as well.
I think the thing is, Tom, you know, if you go around the... I agree with you. If you want to put your car in a vulnerable position on the outside of a corner, you've got to expect you're not going to be left any room. You know, that's a racing instinct thing, isn't it? And it's a tremendous thing if you can go around the outside of someone, but it does require some cooperation. So in any overtaking situation, you require sometimes a little bit of compromise from the guy you're overtaking if he's on the inside. That's really where it comes down to driver etiquette or whatever. And if there's no love lost between two drivers, you're just going to get one guy putting the other guy on the wall. And then somebody will complain about that because, you know, this isn't banger racing. You know, this is supposed to be highly skilled and finely judged racing and using your judgment, not necessarily just using your car as a weapon. And, you know, when we see some situations and certain drivers from a long time ago, you know, they use their car as weapons and that had to be stopped. So maybe instilling tighter regs on these things, you're actually getting drivers to think about whether they can or can't do that anymore. So it may be that, I don't know if it's Michael Massey's objective to try and make the racing cleaner. I mean, this isn't Aussie V8s, is it? You know, you haven't got door handles, you've got wheels that stick out.
Michael Massey's initial mantra was he wanted to improve the racing, let the drivers race. That's what he said when he first came in. And I feel that we're now just slightly going back on that. Anyway, there we go.
Talking of penalties, can we just talk about Raikkonen and Vettel at the very end? Strange incident.
There was a bit of an incident on the last lap. I think Vettel getting involved here as well, and Raikkonen and Russell obviously just up, and here's Vettel getting the run on Raikkonen.
Oh, dear.
Two very, very good friends as well.
Good friends, former teammates, and they might want to have a little chat about that at the end of this race.
I wonder if Raikkonen's just been caught off guard. I don't think Vettel did anything wrong there, to be honest.
No. But he was ahead, wasn't he?
No damage. They're just the cars. They'll just need a fresh coat of paint for the next race, I would suspect.
And then you having to wait back all those hours, Tom, as 11 drivers were hauled in front of the stewards. It's kind of not how you want to end a Grand Prix Sunday, is it?
No. Double waved yellows. Who'd ignored it? Who hadn't? And actually certainly all the guys in the points who were brought in front of the stewards were let off. I think Nikita Mazepin and Nicholas Latifi were the only two penalised for that. But it was an extraordinary incident between those two. Bear in mind, they're great mates from their Ferrari days of being teammates. But I think the pressure is now on Kimi, because part of the same conversation in which I dobbed all of the Sauber people in with Fred Vasseur, I did ask him about Kimi, and he just said he's got to do better in qualifying. He said his race pace is fine, but when you're starting 18th, that makes no difference. And we need more from him. And you just sensed him turning the screw, and then he couldn't stop waxing lyrical about Teo Pourchaire, who's in Formula 2. He couldn't stop waxing lyrical about the job Callum Ilott did in FP1 Friday as well. So that incident will not have endeared Kimi to anyone. And he had to hold his hand up, and he got penalised because he just sort of drove into Seb weirdly. It was a weird incident, wasn't it, Damon? I mean,
it was.
You never did that.
I'm sorry. I mean, at first when I saw him do it, I just thought that was kind of just, he thought, well, I'm not letting him through. I'm going to try and take him out. It was really odd. And the only thing I can say is that he'd previously nudged, who was it? His front wing end plate touched someone else, but just a few laps before as well. And I thought, well, maybe he just can't judge where the front of the car is. Because, you know, to do what happened with Seb was really bizarre. I mean, it was very, I don't know what happened there. I'm reminded of Mark Webber and Sebastian going off at in Turkey, was it, yeah, when they collided? But, you know, it was a little bit like that. It was Seb ran across a little bit too early for Kimi to appreciate what he was doing. But I mean, really, two guys like that experience crashing into each other like that was
at that stage of the race as well. We thought it was all over. We were like, hang on a minute, what's going on? And then Yuki, do you think Yuki's mishaps are just rookie error? Do you think he's just still bedding in?
What do you think, Pinks? I mean, weird. Second weekend at that racetrack as well. It's not like it was the first time he'd been into the pit lane.
And he knows the track so well.
Yeah.
Because he's raced there before many, many times.
I haven't listened back to the team radio, but I've been told that he claims the team hadn't told him after the first incident that he'd gone wrong.
Ah, right.
If that's the case, it would sort of explain why it happened a second time. But equally, why did it happen at all? Because he raced there last weekend.
Right, I feel we've moaned a lot so far about this race. I want to talk about all that's good and great about the racing on Sunday. First of all, let's talk about Max, because it was just dominant, wasn't it? All weekend, the clean sweep on Sunday, lights out to checkered flag, never looked in doubt.
Max Verstappen at Paul Ricard and at the Styrian Grand Prix. He started on pole and he won from pole. The Dutch fans have come to Austria to see him win again. They came, they saw, he conquered. Max Verstappen wins the Austrian Grand Prix. And once again, he's crushed the opposition at the Red Bull Ring.
He's just in another class, isn't he, Damon?
Well, he's in another class, but so's the team. I mean, the team are that car is absolutely brilliant. Sergio is getting a bit closer, etching his way up, but the car's not doing all the work, absolutely. You know, it's his natural ability. He actually very nearly missed out on pole position, because Lando, if you looked at the replay back with Karen showing exactly where they were in relation to each other, Lando was ahead for most of that, except for the last corner. And he put that down. Lando said, well, that's because their car is better. So he was able to get Max was able to get the last corner right and actually gave him a huge advantage. So what he's saying is he drove better than Max did. But Max actually said he didn't think it was a particularly good lap. So he didn't. I thought Red Bull are getting to the point now where they're not showing their hand or their advantage unless it's absolutely necessary. And their advantage in the race was huge. I mean, you know, he just could fit in another pit stop over Mercedes. I mean, who would have said that a few races back, that Red Bull would be able to get to the end of the race and have a free pit stop?
Just to get the fastest lap and that extra point.
It was an amazing, amazing weekend by Red Bull. And the fact that they can mess up qualifying, admit that they messed up. Max was actually pinks. I don't know what he was like with you, but he was actually really annoyed after qualifying.
He'd taken pole,
yet he was angry because they messed it up. He said, Q3, absolute mess.
Well, because he didn't like the fact that the team sent him out first and he gave Lando such a slipstream. And so it's great to see that he's constantly pushing for perfection and that even on a sort of subpar day, as he put it, you can still put it on pole and your nearest title rival's back in P4.
Yeah, that is how big the advantage is.
How old is Max? Is he
23,
right? So if you were to see him talking in being interviewed, you'd say this guy's got to be 34 years old.
Yeah, 100%.
I mean, his maturity, considering he's in the position of going for his first ever Formula One world title. The guy is cool as a cucumber. He's sharp when he comes to difficult questions. He comes back with a very sensible reply. He doesn't rise to the bait at all. I mean, really looking very formidable, you know, for his relative youth. But he has been in Formula One. Is it seventh season now? No, six. What is it?
It was 2016 when he won in Barcelona, wasn't it?
So 15 was his first year, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's when he won on his debut for Red Bull.
It's like he's won championships before. You ask him a question after the race and say, how much are you enjoying riding this wave of success? And he goes, I am enjoying it, but we mustn't let up. We've got to keep pushing. We've got to keep driving home the advantage. And really,
he's an old soul.
Yeah, yeah. Old head, young shoulders.
Well, I've said it before, but we mustn't forget Honda's contribution as well, because they have done a fantastic job with this.
That just makes me even more frustrated that they're leaving, Damon.
Well, it's such a shame, but they will leave their mark in some way. They're going to leave a legacy, because it will be, was it Red Bull Powertrains or something is going to be called in the future.
Guys, it's chassis and engine, though, because over these last three races, this triple header, Red Bull have introduced a new front wing, a new floor, a new rear wing, the new power unit. Everything is working in harmony there. All the while, Mercedes haven't introduced anything.
They've got a bit coming, haven't they, for Silverstone?
There's a bit coming for Silverstone.
A fair bit.
Yeah. Like Johnny said, it's going to have to be a fair bit.
Yeah.
He signed off with that one. I mean, you know, it will have to be a bit of a chunk, Tom, I think, to be able to take the fight.
I think by when we do our post-Silverstone podcast, I think we will have a very clear indication as to the direction of this world championship. If Red Bull are still dominant at Silverstone with Mercedes bringing this upgrade, then Max is looking very, very, very good, isn't he?
There's so much to celebrate about the weekend. George Russell. And I know he didn't finish in the points, but my God, he did well to defend and hang on in there. And
his quali,
His quali was amazing, wasn't it?
Yeah. I'm sorry if we've been a bit negative, but I mean, you know, there was, we were talking about penalties and stuff, but he ended up getting asked, they looked at whether or not he defended too vigorously with Fernando Alonso, didn't they, in the race, and whether or not he changed lines or something. But eventually he had to give up his position, but not after outfoxing the old fox himself with a few clever, you know, car positioning manoeuvres and keeping him back as long as he could. But ultimately it was to no avail. But he fought for that point brilliantly.
But DH, the key to it was that on the approach to turn four, which has caused so many problems, he had his car in a place that prevented Fernando from trying to go around the outside or the inside. He just judged it perfectly, lap after lap. I don't know if you saw something put out on the F1 Twitter account, but you could see from an on-car camera that when they got out of their cars in Parc Fermé, Fernando called George, walked round to see him, and they hugged each other. That was just...
Oh, brilliant.
Brilliant.
No, I didn't see that.
Just respect. Great. And yeah. Fernando then came out later and said, I knew it was going to be really hard getting past George because he's so good. And I felt sad he didn't get his point, but I'm afraid I have to do what I've got to do.
Yeah. And it was interesting because George was phlegmatic afterwards as well, because he was like, you know what? I enjoyed it. Plenty more of that to come, please. You know, rather than sort of wallowing in self-pity for the fact that he still hasn't got this first point for Williams. It's great. I love seeing the old versus the new guard.
Do you think that Fernando would have hugged him if he'd held on to 10th place? Maybe not.
Actually, I think Alonso 2.0 would have done. I think he is Formula One at the minute.
Yeah, it's all good.
And to the extent that in the press conference on Thursday, bit of bants before the cameras were turned on, I said, what have you done between the two races? And he said, I stayed in the mountains and I went for a bike ride. And I said, oh, that must have been hard work with all the hills. And he goes, no. At my age, you get an e-bike. He'd never have laughed like that back in the day. He'd never have sort of put himself down like that. So he's just, he's in great form, loving it and loving the battle. And
yeah. It's also intense when you're young, isn't it? It was also quite funny, I thought, with George and Lando when they shook hands at the end of the race. And he shook his hand. He said, oh, you're a bit sweaty. And he said, that's champagne, mate.
Yeah, that was a great comeback, wasn't it? Oh,
yeah.
It's good. On Fernando, I feel that he's grateful for this sort of new lease of life that coming back to the sport has offered him. And he recognises that he's not going to be in it forever. And he quite likes seeing the new talent coming through. You know, he was very supportive of Guanyu Zhou when he stepped in for him in his car. That was a lovely moment. Here's a young driver who's looked up to Fernando. You know, there was this great photo of him waving his flag at the 2005 Chinese Grand Prix.
Wow.
And
so they're all
and
out.
There he is stepping in for him for the first practice session of the Austrian Grand Prix. Funnily enough, Guanyu Zhou said to me, he was just so helpful and, you know, gave me so much advice. And I was thinking, that's because he just wanted to crash his car.
Oh, that's a little bit harsh. But, you know, it is true. He probably didn't want it. But I think there is this generosity of spirit, you know, with Fernando, yeah, which is absolutely genuine. And that's, you know, he's a proper champion. I think Lewis is like that now as well. I think they have got to the point where they've got enough in the bank to be able to, yeah, I don't mean money, I mean, you know, in terms of success and racing,
they've
to be able
proved
to
all they
give a bit back. Yeah, it's brilliant.
With age,
yeah,
really comes good perspective. And Fernando was funny, actually, talking about he started doing track walks, having not done them before in his career. And he started in Portugal. He did one in Portugal for the first time and finished in the points. So he thought, oh God, I better keep doing that then. So he's done one ever since and finished in the points. Every time he's finished in the points, he's done a track walk. So he just...
There you go. You see, suspicion, yes, is still there. Yeah.
What about Danny Rick? What do we make of how he's responded? Because that was absolutely soul-destroying after qualifying, wasn't it? I mean, having been identified as not as the weakest link, but certainly, you know, Danny has had some struggles getting the best out of his car. And then for your teammate to nearly put it on pole position and you'd be 14th. I mean, he recovered fantastically well with a great drive. But what is going on with his qualifying? Is there any, you know, what's he got to do? He's lost, is something missing. He can't find it in that McLaren.
I feel that at least this triple header ended on a high for him. I mean, a relative high. You know, he did have a strong race. He did come through the field. He did some great overtakes. Talking to him yesterday on the stage, he was exhausted, mentally, physically exhausted. He needs a break now. And I think it's because he has been questioning everything. Why isn't this working? Why isn't this clicking for me? And I think perhaps taking a few days out, pressing the reset button, hopefully coming back strong at Silverstone. He loves Silverstone. He always drives well there. It'll be interesting to see how competitive that McLaren is. But Damon, as you say, I'm not sure anyone can answer the question as to why he hasn't nailed quali yet, because he can't, the team can't.
I think it's really difficult if you come up against a mystery like this. I have had it a few times in my racing career, mostly towards the end, it has to be said, where the magic just suddenly disappears. And, you know, you can't work out what's going on. But, you know, he's still quite young, Danny, so it's not like the talent's disappeared. But definitely, we mentioned Kimi. You know, Lewis will be 38 by the time he stops. That was the age that Alain Prost retired. But I think after 33, the magic starts to disappear. The magic bit, and that's the magic bit, is the young guys have the magic bit, which they can't, they don't even know they've got, you know, they just got instinct. And then you get this blend of experience and knowledge and that instinct.
So what's the sweet spot? What's the crossover? Because I thought you said it was about 33 was actually the prime age for performance, because it was experience with that kind of youthful exuberance.
Yeah, I mean, you can't make and firm rules about it, because obviously fitness has an impact. And I'm sure that there might be a doctor. Maybe we can get to speak to someone on this show about, you know, what happens to your physiology actually to make you lose your faculties or lose the things that you need to be a racing driver. I don't know what they are, but I can tell you that there's no two ways about it. It's going to go eventually. You can't keep going on forever.
At what point are we going to say, do you know what? Dan Rick is driving as well as he's ever driven. He's just up against a guy who is one of the best.
Yeah.
When are we actually going to start saying that? That Lando Norris is the real deal. And if he was within, Daniel was within 0.2 of him in qualifying. And maybe that is that the gap.
You're echoing your namesake, Jeremy Clarkson, tweeted, is he the real deal? You know, is Lando the real deal? And Zach replied with, I'm saying he is. Which he clearly did quite a while ago. Yeah. So, and the irony, I thought, was of course that Derek, bless him, who was so into this young driver program, the BRDC Autosport Star of Tomorrow thing, when Lando turned up, he just said, this guy's amazing. And he was raging about it. And then he gave him a 5-second penalty. But so that must have been tough to do that. So, but I'm sure he's, you know, he's got good reason. But Lando is very, very special. There's no doubt about it. And we're talking about George Russell as well. You know, we're talking about British drivers coming into the British Grand Prix. The future is definitely very bright.
Okay, so who for you is the more complete driver with the most potential, George Russell or Lando Norris?
Flipping hell. You know, I don't want to have to choose the two, because I think
well,
that
sorry.
But I think Lando's had the opportunity now to prove, as has George. You know, he's led Grand Prix. Both of them are just phenomenal. But I mean, you got Lewis saying, what was that about? The radio communication.
He's a great driver. Lando loved that. We played it back to him after the show, after the race. We played it to him and he like just beat his chest and was like, yes, Lewis. I mean, it's lovely to hear that, isn't it? From your rivals and someone like Lewis, who's so accomplished.
But Pinks, it gets better than that, because I was told that in the pen, the TV pen, Lando arrived in the TV pen after the podium. Lewis stopped whatever interview he was doing, went over to Lando, put his hand on his shoulder and said, hello, Speedy Gonzalez. So not only was there the radio message, there was this big show in the TV pen as well. What is that all about?
Well, you've also got the same going on with Fernando and George. There's a bit of a sort of bromance developing there, isn't there? You know, Fernando almost felt guilty overtaking him at the end and depriving him of that elusive first point for Williams.
But Pinks, on the subject of Lewis coming out with all this stuff, because I think it's relevant, because we're now discussing who is going to partner him at Mercedes. Toto Wolff has said it's either going to be Valtteri Bottas or George Russell. But is Lewis bigging up Lando Norris just to raise a few questions in Toto's head about, because I think Lewis would love to have Valtteri Bottas next to him, because he knows he's a known quantity. And in fact, Valtteri did a very good race yesterday, didn't he, in Austria? Because when it didn't work for Lewis after he had those aerodynamic issues, he was there to take the second place. But I'm just wondering if Lewis is bowling
an ulterior motive.
I don't know. It did seem strange, didn't it?
That is the alternative interpretation, that there is no ulterior motive and that it was just a nice thing to do. There is that possibility. But you just
there is that as well.
Tom's he's been in this game too long. He's seen it all before. He knows what they're like.
Well, I don't know. But DH, if you wanted to compliment a driver, why do you need to do it in front of all the TV cameras? Why can't you just do it away from the TV cameras? It would mean more, actually. It would feel more sincere, wouldn't it?
And actually, I would have loved it if Lewis had complimented George after he stepped in for him at the end of last season. That would have been really big. And he was noticeably quiet.
Yeah, well, the intrigue is oh God, it's a savoury one.
But so who would we sign if we're Toto Wolff? Who would we put alongside?
Oh, I'd definitely put George in.
I think it's done, Tom.
Damon thinks it's done. This is nothing against Valtteri, because I think he's great. But there's just something so exciting about having George and Lewis in the same team.
Completely agree with that. And actually, if I was Valtteri Bottas, I think Williams is a good option next year.
Yeah.
Mercedes engine, Mercedes rear end. Look at the transformation that team has gone through in the last three races. Yeah. They're now disappointed
with P11. The old swapperoo. Back to where you were, Valtteri.
Yeah, so I think, you know, if you're Valtteri Bottas, do you want to be Lewis's number two? I know officially he's not, but Lewis's number two again. Or do you want to go and be the team leader at Williams in what could be a good car?
It's a really good point, Tom. It's a really good point.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And mould a team around him. You're good, TC, aren't you? Clever. Clever chap.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Should we talk Ferrari?
Oh, crikey.
Yeah.
I thought Carlos Sainz did very well at the weekend. Why'd you say crikey?
I say crikey because they finished, what is it? They finished 5th and 8th, didn't they? I was kind of expecting a little bit more.
Well,
Pinks is getting her sheet of paper.
Hang on a minute. My excessive notes. Why did you expect more when they qualified?
No, coming into the weekend.
Outside. Oh, coming into the weekend. Okay, fine. Because that was the first time that neither driver had got through to Q3. Obviously, they were then promoted because of Vettel's penalty, then separated them. But they did have the free choice of tyres. I thought Sainz did a great job going long on that first stint. And he was thrilling to watch at the end and to finish up P5 from starting 10th.
Pinks, yes to all of the above. I meant coming into the weekend, I was expecting more, but I felt given the car that they had, they made all the right choices over the weekend, not to qualify on the soft tyre. Absolutely the right call. And as a result, they finished comfortably ahead of Aston Martin, who did qualify on the soft tyre just to get into the top 10. I just thought the C5, the softest compound Pirelli, would have suited them a little more over one lap, because we've seen them perform so well on the C5 tyre at other racetracks this year. But given that it wasn't, hey, they did a great job. And Carlos is a wily old racing driver, isn't he? He sort of does it by stealth, I think, quite a lot. He's a real thinker. And then suddenly at the end of the race, I find myself so often thinking, oh my goodness, Carlos is fifth. Where did that come from?
Yeah, and I know what you mean.
I'd like to know whether that was Carlos's strategy, race strategy, or whether it was Ferrari came up with it. I'll bet Carlos said, listen, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to put a hard set on. I'm going to go as long as I can, and I'm going to be quick at the end. And it works. And I mean, that's the that is the extraordinary thing about race strategies, isn't it? That actually you do have this option. Very few people go for that option, because obviously if you qualify in the top 10, you've used up probably one of the softer options of the tyre. So you don't get those things. But it's incredible how well you can do from the back with a long first stint and being racy at the end. I mean, it's demoralising for drivers to be caught. So there's a kind of almost psychological factor when you're looking at a guy who might be a long way back, but he's knocking 2 seconds a lap out of you at the end of a race. You know you're going to be got at some point. So, and it's also inspiring. On the other hand, it's inspiring to be quicker than everybody. So you actually go faster because you're feeling faster because you are actually faster. So, you know, psychologically, it's a really good tactic. Although, of course, the science says the best thing is to do is qualify on pole position and just go into the distance and don't look back. But I think the long first stint is a really much more attractive option, I feel, as a driver.
But particularly at the Red Bull Ring, when the top 10 are all on the medium or soft.
Now, one person we haven't spoken that much about is Lewis Hamilton. And he predicted that Max was going to cruise to victory. He also talked about it being a damage limitation weekend. It was damage that he picked up. How significant do you believe that was, Tom? How much of an impact did that have on his race?
Well, massive impact, because he was running second and finished fourth, and they had to swapsie the two drivers, didn't they? Speaking to the engineers after the race, it was costing him about 0.6 per lap, which is huge on such a short lap. The damage being around what they call the cake tin at the rear of the car, which is sort of the rear uprights. So it was damage that he inflicted over the sausage curb at turn one. And I think the vibrations at turns 9 and 10 as well hadn't helped. Remember that they've had quite a few reliability issues at this track, Mercedes. Last year they had, was it an electrical loom that was causing them some distress? And then in 2019, was it overheating they were suffering
cooling
from?
Cooling issues, yeah.
So it hasn't been a straightforward racetrack for them, and very much so. That was very much the case yesterday, and I thought he was pretty deflated after the race. Just, do you know, I think one of the reasons he's re-signed for 2 years is he can see the writing on the wall for this season. I think somewhere in the back of his head, he thinks, this is over, I need number 8.
Are you serious?
I think so.
Well, I do know what you mean, that he's like giving himself another chance of securing that 8th title. He went on record as saying that he was enjoying this fight so much, it sort of invigorated him and he wants more of the same.
Pinkle, he enjoyed it up to and including the Spanish Grand Prix.
Right. Well, his last win.
Yes,
his last win.
Since then, it's been really hard.
It's pretty astonishing to think, Damon, he hasn't won since Spain.
I've got a conspiracy theory.
Here we go. You're as bad as Tom.
Wow. What about Mercedes? They sit down and they go, well, we've got to come up with a snorter for 2022, new car and everything. So let's just not develop this car. Because if Lewis doesn't win the championship this year, he's going to want to stay. If he wins the championship, he might leave.
Oh.
With 8 in the bag. Now, that is scurrilous and fiendish thinking. But I'm prepared to put my hand up and say I did think about that for a moment. But I'm accusing Mercedes of doing something really fiendish.
I feel they're so hungry for success. They wouldn't just throw away.
No, exactly. No,
title.
It's just mad talk. That is completely mad. Forget that idea. But anyway, I just thought I'd throw it out there. And it is obviously nonsense. Tom, you're right. Choking. Yep. I'm actually, Tom is choking on my suggestion there.
Yep.
But anyway, that little nasty thought crossed my mind, having watched Formula One for a very long time. And, you know, I just wonder, you know, they want to keep Lewis. Anyway, if they lost Lewis, I think they've got pick of the bunch because they've still got a great car. But we've got a new regulation change. So who knows what's going to happen next year?
And do you think this will be his last contract in Formula One? Do you think he will leave when he's 38 at the end of this next 2-year deal?
I think it all comes down to whether you're enjoying it and whether you're winning. You know, that's with Lewis, that was obviously, you said he was a bit down. I mean, it wasn't a much fun race going backwards and having to concede the position to Valtteri. First, they say to Valtteri, don't overtake Lewis. And then they changed their mind halfway through, or a lap later where it was. And
so was that the right decision?
Yeah, that was the right thing to do. You had to do that. They were under threat and Lewis couldn't hang on anymore because he lost 30 points or something of downforce, which is a lot.
And at least they salvaged something from the weekend with Valtteri P2.
Yes, they're in the kind of damage limitation mode at the moment, Mercedes.
But just to back up your argument, Damon, they could have done more to help Lewis. So let's say they hadn't swapped their two drivers yesterday. Norris would probably have overtaken and found his way through to P2 because Lewis was so slow. But Lewis would have finished third instead of fourth.
Would he? Yeah, okay.
He would have, if they hadn't swapped the drivers and just told Valtteri to hold station. The worst case scenario was that Lando Norris would have finished second and Lewis third, which would have given him more points for the championship. Yeah. So that's them engineering the loss of this world championship to keep Lewis for 2022.
Yeah, there would have been quite a lot of fallout. there would have been a lot of fallout if Valtteri had been, told to stay there and just tug along behind a car that's up 3/10 of a second slower. 4/10 of a second slower than his car.
How that car has improved over the last three races is nothing short of sensational. And as he said after the race, we've got an upgrade coming. It's the last upgrade. So it needs to be huge if it's going to have any impact on this world championship. And I think he knows in his heart of hearts.
Okay, so what can Mercedes do? Because I think Mercedes fans everywhere, and indeed fans of the sport who want to see wheel-to-wheel racing and the tightest possible fight and championship, want to know how they're going to turn things around. Can you optimise a car? Can you really get more out of what you've currently got and not bring upgrades, Damon?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, sometimes it is about adapting the car. When you've got very, very fine margins, which you do have at the Red Bull Ring, being such a short lap and with so few corners, then tiny differences make a difference. So driver confidence is a big difference, actually. And that comes from finding the balance, as we've discussed with Lando and Daniel. You know, it could be that just dialing the driver into the car. And so those fine tuning things are really important. Don't forget, we've got this ridiculously new dramatic change to the whole qualifying format coming up at Silverstone. So all things are uncertain at the moment in terms of qualifying.
How do you feel about that, Damon? As a driver, how would you feel going into that?
I think it's a great idea to try something new. I think it's been quite well thought out. I think it will create interest. I think that Friday you'll be able to come out on the news with new information that I think will be on a Friday night, which is quite often not the case at the moment. With Friday's a bit of a damp squib in terms of how it affects the race. Nobody really knows. There's nothing definitive. But by Friday night, we'll have a pole position for the tomorrow's race. And so that will be, I think, good for promoting the sport. And I think people will tune in. I think it's going to be a really big, a very interesting development in Formula One.
Tom, for anyone who isn't clear as to what's happening, just run us through it, how it's going to work.
We're going to have qualifying on Friday, qualifying as we know it now. That will set the grid.
Instead of FP2.
We have one practice session before that.
Let's go in chronological order. Friday, Friday morning, go.
Right.
Nothing on Friday morning.
We're going to have one practice session. Then we go into qualifying on Friday, and that will set the grid for sprint qualifying the following day. And the result of sprint qualifying will set the grid for the race on Sunday. I completely agree with Damon. I think it's a fantastic idea. I've got one issue with it, which is that the driver who finishes the sprint qualifying race on Saturday will be credited with pole position. And I'm afraid I love quali and qualifying is about one Banzai lap. And so I feel that the quali, the pole position man, is going to be the guy on Friday, not Saturday.
Do you think it gives the fans a bit more because they get to see and enjoy more competition throughout the weekend?
Oh, 100%, 100%. No, my only issue is this statistical thing that the person who sets the fastest one lap, the fastest lap of the weekend on Friday, assuming it's dry, will not be the guy credited with pole position. That will be the guy who's won the sprint qualifying race on Saturday. That's my only issue with it.
I just picked this up thinking it was a pint of water and it's an old gin and tonic that someone's left on the side. It's flat, warm gin and tonic from the weekend.
Amazing. You don't have to make excuses for us, Natalie. We understand.
It's a bit early for that, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's
definitely.
A massive glug of warm gin and tonic.
Well, that's a good chat. I think it's been a good debrief.
No. We are not going anywhere, Damon Hill, because the best bit of the show is yet to come.
Oh.
Which is, of course, Ask Damon.
They're going to be asking me more questions.
They are.
Oh.
Probing.
God. Okay, let's hear them.
Hi, Damon. It's Chris from London in the UK here. I've seen many Formula One races in my time since I was a wee nipper back in the mid-90s. And one of the most memorable Grand Prix I've seen is seeing Lewis Hamilton be crowned world champion for the first time in 2008, which actually I watched in the same room as you in the BRDC, where a few people got invited for a special screening. But I wanted to ask you, what's the most memorable race you have experienced as a spectator, not necessarily a driver, but as a spectator sitting from home before your career, during your career? Thank you very much.
So Chris, asking me which is the most memorable Grand Prix I've experienced as a spectator. And I would say that some of the most important things, the races that inspired me the most are probably centre on Nigel Mansell, I think. So Brands Hatch, I remember, in 1985, I think. It was his first ever Grand Prix win. I think it was the European Grand Prix. Tom is statistically much more accurate than I am. Might be able to remind me. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Yeah, so I was racing. I just started car racing. And at the time, we hadn't had a British world champion since 1976 with James Hunt. So Nigel cracking his first Grand Prix win there at Brands Hatch inspired me. And I stood at Paddock Bend outside a hospitality unit, and I stood there rooted to the spot every single lap and looked at this speed trap thing they had going into Paddock Bend, and it was 185 miles an hour going to every lap. These are the turbocharged Hondas. And I actually got a chance to drive that car in Suzuka a few years ago with Sky, and they set it up and I drove it with Honda. Oh my God, what a brutal car that was. Anyway, so what an amazing, uplifting experience that was. You know, I got, you know, really inspired by watching that race. So, yeah.
I thought you might have said one of watching your dad win a race or something like that.
Yeah. I wasn't really orientated towards thinking myself as a racing driver back then. So that's what my dad did. And I didn't really have so much. It was so much more difficult to follow the sport in those days. You know, you stood at the track and you watched cars. You didn't have screens to look at, or, you know, the communication was pretty difficult with just tannoys. So I wasn't really aware when I was at a track when I was younger how my dad was doing. But I remember him winning the International Trophy race at Silverstone in 1971, I think it was, which is his last Formula One race victory. But I was more interested in listening to Arsenal versus Leeds, I think, in the FA Cup final on the radio. So I just saw him go past and then I go back to the football. So no, I wasn't a terrible admission, but I wasn't so inspired by watching my dad race, but more by Nigel. But they both had moustaches. Maybe there's a connection.
Right, should we get the next question then?
Hello, this is Frank from San Francisco, California. Very much enjoying your podcast. And of course, the F1 season has been awesome this year. I'm really pulling for my favorite, Carlos Sainz. Beyond that, I'm curious, what's the oldest F1 car you've driven on a track? Very fascinated about the way the technology has changed and what maybe surprised you about the way it handled and performed. I just really like to hear those insights. Thank you very much, and keep up the good work, everybody. It's been a great year so far.
Well, that's actually a lovely question going into Goodwood, isn't it, Damon? Because you must have driven some
Yeah, old bangers.
Great. Bangers, no. Some classic F1 cars there.
It's fantastic. I love the old history, the old cars, the evolution of Formula One. It's just fantastic when you go back and you get a chance, as I'm lucky enough to have done, to be given these extremely valuable cars to do a few laps. So I think I have to say the oldest car I probably drove was an ERA at Silverstone, Donington actually, sorry. It was basically an engine on what looked like just a square frame with some wheels bolted on each corner. But it was one of the very early, obviously, English racing cars that showed any success. So what year would that be, Tom? That's pre-war, isn't it? ERA? But maybe it was... Actually, Raymond Mays, wasn't it? Maybe it was early 50s, actually.
Could have been.
But absolutely terrifying to drive because you've got nothing to stop you falling out. You have to hang on to the steering wheel. And there's no sides to the cockpit and also no seatbelts. And anyway, you feel like you're sitting on a bar stool. You're so high up. So, but a great noise. The engine made absolutely a brilliant noise.
Which car do you wish you'd been able to drive from history?
I think probably that beautiful Mercedes that Fangio used to drive and Moss used to drive probably would be one. 1955, is it?
Or 196, right? Yeah. If you're listening, Mercedes.
Or maybe one of those shark-nosed Ferraris. I mean, there's so many. They're beautiful. I've driven nearly all of my dad's cars. So one of the very early... I've driven a Lotus. Yeah, the Lotus.
Which Lotus have you driven?
I think it was a 1959-58 car that was actually a Formula 2 car. And I've driven the first BRM as well, 1960 BRM.
God, listen to you. So how many have you driven?
I've probably driven most of the BRMs. In fact... At Goodwood, I think I'm going to be driving a BRM in the Murray Walker celebration that they've got going on there. But so I'll get a chance to drive. I should make a list. I know Martin Brundle has got a very comprehensive list of every car he's ever driven, which is probably a bit bigger than my list.
Actually, he's driven a race winner from every decade of Formula One.
Yeah.
Amazing. Martin has.
Yeah. Yeah. And he likes to drive them fast as well. He doesn't just go round. I mean, you know, he gives them some stick as well.
Have I told you about the time I drove a race winner, guys? Did I ever tell you? Have I ever bored you with that?
No, but I feel like you're going to.
I want to hear. I do actually want to hear, Tom.
So early 2000s, British American Tobacco were doing a swapsy between Jacques Villeneuve and a guy called Dave Charlton, South African Formula One driver from the 70s. And we had Emerson Fittipaldi's 1972 championship winning car at Valencia. So they swapped. Dave Charlton drove that year's current Formula One car and Jacques Villeneuve drove the Lotus 72 that Dave had raced. And they then said to me, do you want to have a go? So I was like, yeah, all right, I'll have a go. So I signed my life away.
Don't bloody mind if I do.
Signed my life away. And luck, you remember how Jacques Villeneuve always had oversized overalls? They were always too big for him.
But he was quite small.
He was small, but anyway, they managed to fit me, and in I got, and it was an absolute joy. Of course I didn't drive it hard, but what really struck me was how sweet the whole thing was. I thought there would be a lot of travel in the steering or the gears or something. Absolutely sweet. And Dave Charlton said it was like driving the car from 40 years ago. He said it's just like it was back in the day. It's amazing,
that is how
they look after the cars and how good they are, these old cars now.
The people who own them are just, they love them. So they invest a lot of money. They've got to have quite a lot of money to look after them. So they're actually sometimes better than they were back when they were built brand new.
Classic Team Lotus, I think, we're looking after this one.
Lovely. Lovely stuff there. There you go. San Francisco, Frank. Thank you very much for that great question. If you have any more interesting questions, then we'd love to hear them and play them. And you have to send an audio recording to askdamonhill@gmail.com.
What are you guys up to then for the rest of the day?
Well, Pinkle, I am about to go to the airport and I'm really excited about going home after 3 weeks on the road. So that's me. What about you?
Probably going to go back to bed, if I'm completely honest. I'm absolutely knackered. It has been a long triple header, hasn't it? And I'm thinking, because the kids break up at the end of this week, I may well make the best and most out of them being at school right now, which is to have a little sleep during the day. And Damon, what are you doing for the rest of the day?
I haven't got that far yet. I haven't thought about it. God, it's been... it usually involves some sort of dog walk. We've got this dog who just needs walking all the time.
I mean, how selfish is the dog to actually want to be walked?
Yeah, he wants feeding as well.
Oh, no.
Yeah, it's non-stop. No, the cat gets me up at 5:30. She's over there asleep. But I'll probably do a bit of guitar practice, a bit of golf practice, you know.
Oh, what a lot.
Golf practice, yeah. Golf
He's
practice. Pinks, what about you? If the kids are at school, you need to get out on the golf course again.
I do. Yeah, I do. All right, don't remind me. I do.
Are we going to have a bit of a team meet-up at Goodwood next weekend then? Goodwood Festival of Speed.
Yeah. We're going to be there, aren't we, Damon?
I am going to be there, yes.
We're the team.
Okay, with the team, we should meet up.
Yes.
But are we allowed to meet up? That's what I don't understand yet about the whole, is it free for all, you can go anywhere and do anything, or are we going to be kept in bubbles?
No, I think we do have to be pretty strict, actually, because we've obviously got the British Grand Prix the following week. We don't want a big outbreak in the paddock. So it's going to be strict, but it's going to be great to be back.
Well, I think that is the end of the show. Let's end it with our customary mess. Who's going to start?
Natalie is going to do the whole thing slickly and professionally, as she does everything.
Okay. Just introducing Timo Werner, Chelsea and Germany's goalkeeper.
Don't you think he looks like Max Verstappen, Pinks? Did you find that?
I was too busy trying to recover from my error of calling him a keeper. What was that about? A complete space cadet moment. I'm a Chelsea fan, for goodness sake. I know exactly who he is, but I called him a keeper. And then, of course, I got loads of banter about the fact, well, you know, he hasn't been scoring many goals, but that's a bit harsh.
What did he say, Pinks? What did he say to
he
you?
Was
you
so he was so lovely. He was so lovely. He was like, I don't even think he noticed, to be honest, but of course everyone else did, including my husband and all my mates at home going, Pinks!
Oh, well.
Anyway.
We won't let you forget that. And also you called Paul de Resta Max as well.
I
in
did.
The show.
But
I'm not picking you apart here. So maybe you're not the best person to sign us off.
Well, this has been an F1 podcast in association with Audioboom, or an Audioboom
and
podcast in association with Formula One. Yeah. F1 Nation, this is the podcast.
It's a hard line.
It's the F1 Nation podcast in association with Formula One. And, no, not in association, produced by Formula One in association with Audio Boom. We got it right. I'm sure we did somewhere in there.
You nailed it, DH.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
2025 marks the 60th anniversary of the first Honda Formula One victory in the 1965 Mexico Grand Prix. More than half a century later, the drive and innovation that powers Honda racing still inspires everything Honda does, from F1 victories to the Civic Hybrid being named the 2025 North American Car of the Year. Honda Racing is leading the charge when it comes to innovation. And here's where it gets really cool. Every Honda-powered F1 car is packed with sensors, hundreds of them, all feeding live data straight back to the Honda Racing team in Sakura, Japan. We're talking about real-time analysis that helps engineers squeeze out every ounce of performance on the track. And the amazing part? That same cutting-edge thinking is making its way into the cars we drive every day, thanks to the expertise of Honda Racing engineers. Their work has led to advances like the hybrid technology now used in Honda's consumer vehicles. The 2025 Civic Sedan Hybrid is engineered for fun, from the racetrack to your driveway. Learn more about the Civic and the latest Honda innovations at honda.com.